That is a challenging passage, isn't it? But before we get to it, I want to just give a little bit of context, because I know we've got guests and actually we're probably all quite forgetful. So I just want to give a bit of context as to what we've been looking at the church over the last few weeks and that we're going to be looking at over the next few weeks to come. So this passage is taken from Jesus' probably most famous teaching, his Sermon on the Mount. Thank you very much. I was just singing your praises and you laughed. So we're looking at the Sermon on the Mount, but we're looking at it from a particular perspective. We're looking at it from the perspective of life's big challenges. If you read it, it's amazing how many timeless kind of challenges that face us all Jesus touches on during that passage, during that those chapters of the Sermon on the Mount. Challenges and issues like, how do we handle conflict with each other? How do we view and handle our money and possessions? What does it look like to live with integrity? And actually, if you think about those issues, they are individual issues, but they're also much bigger. They're societal issues. How do we view money and possessions as a society? How do we handle conflict as a society? Integrity, etc. They're individual, but they're much bigger than that. And they're really issues that I think shape our lives. They actually shape the trajectory and direction of our lives. So it's really important that we have a good reference point for how we handle and wrestle with and face those issues. Because the way you handle those issues define the choices you make, and therefore who you're becoming, because that's the result of the choices we make. It defines the quality of our relationships with one another, our family, our work colleagues and our friends, and all those sorts of things. So I want to ask the question as we start. Could you raise your hand for me if you have never been tempted to do anything that you knew was wrong or unwise? Fantastic. I thought Aloni was going to raise her hand then. She sat up like this. Sorry, I didn't mean to embarrass you. Brilliant. So we're all in the same boat. This is applicable to all of us on some level. It's part of the human experience. I'd say if you put your hand up then, I'd ask you to check your pulse. Because it is. It's part of the human experience. Temptation, because we're humans with desire, and with desire brings temptation. And today Jesus touches on sexual temptation. And we all know that pornography is an issue in our world that is damaging so many people, so many relationships. But equally important, temptation, the desire for status. Consumerism, the desire for more and more and more. And our culture doesn't help us with many of those things. But I don't know what areas you struggle with temptation in this morning, but just to say at the beginning, you're not alone. We are all in the same boat. We are all human beings, and that is part of the human experience. So I always like to give a bit of context to what we've read or listened to or looked at. So firstly, the Bible, which is where our readings were from today. The Bible, if you've read it cover to cover, is absolutely jam-packed full of stories of temptation. It really is. From the first pages, you know, the Bible starts with creation and the humans are created. And what's the first thing that happens to humans? They're tempted in the Garden of Eden. So it starts with this story of temptation and it doesn't let up. It doesn't let up at all. You could almost say that the Bible is the story of God's grace in the face of man's mess that we make in regards to temptation. So that's the story, and that's our story. The story continues today, really. We're never going to be perfect. Our story is the story of God's grace in the face of our temptations and trials. So how do we deal with it? How do we deal with temptation? And the first thing I want to say this morning is, straight from the mouth of Jesus, really, is that the way to deal with temptation is to get to the heart of the matter. And the heart of the matter happens to be a matter of the heart. Jesus says, you've heard it said, don't commit adultery. Of course they had. Of course they'd heard that. It says it in their law, the Jewish law. He was speaking to Jewish people. And for Jews, the reference point for all of life was the law. But then he says, but I tell you, if you look at a woman lustfully, you've already committed adultery with her in your heart. The heart of the matter is a matter of the heart. Because the law, which was a good thing, when it was given, it was a good thing, the law. Because it taught slaves how to be free. They'd never known freedom before, the Jewish people, and they came out of slavery and God gave them the law as a gift. This is how you live freely. But the law only deals with symptoms, not causes. But at the time of Jesus, we know, and we've talked about this a lot in our sermons over the last few months, I feel, that the religious leaders used this law to mask heart issues. The heart where real life's lived, actually. And for them, as long as they didn't display symptoms, they were okay. You know, they could say, I've not committed adultery, therefore, you know, I'm righteous, I'm holy. But Jesus knew that the real problem was the cause, not the effect. It was the heart issue. So he says the real issue here, it's not the adultery actually, it's way before that. It's when we objectify someone for our consumption, i.e. lust. And he gets right to the root and he says you've got to deal with the root. And how does he do that? Well, he has a radical answer, doesn't he? A radical response. Cut it out. Cut it out. He uses this exaggerated language, doesn't he, to make his point. If your eye causes you to sin, gouge it out. If your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off. Do you know, I became a Christian, I've told you this, when I was a teenager. Those words were terrifying for a teenage boy, full of the desires of youth. Reading those verses, and I know all the men in the room are probably knowing what I'm talking about, and the women knowing what I'm talking about, but wanting to live for God, reading those verses, thinking, oh no, I'm in big trouble. Got to gouge my eyes out. I think most of us would be blind, is that fair to say, if we took those words too literally? But he's making an exaggerated point to make a really strong point. In other words, don't live in the fantasy land. Don't even entertain the thought. So where the religious leaders of his day dealt with symptoms, Jesus was a radical because he dealt with the root, but he didn't just point out the problem. He had this transforming initiative, as one commentator put it. He dealt with the thing that bound people up and then offered a transforming initiative. And in this case, it was cut it out. Cut out the problem. But, okay, I feel like I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit because it's not that easy, really, is it? Because we kind of know that, really. We know that if we want to avoid temptation, in other words, don't go near it. If, you know, if you're on a diet, don't buy that chocolate cake and put it in the fridge. You don't want to have to wrestle with that temptation. It's not always just a simple matter of making good choices. As a mentor of mine once said, you never overcome sin by gritting your teeth. You just don't. You can't do it. It'll overcome you eventually. And actually facing temptation, I think, goes to a much deeper level. It goes to the level of identity, actually. And I want to turn our attention to another passage that we haven't actually read this morning, but it's tied in. So we've read the bit about adultery in the Sermon on the Mount, and earlier Miranda and Anna beautifully read the story of Jesus' temptation in the wilderness. Does anyone know, without looking at your Bibles, what the passage is directly before that one? The temptation in the wilderness. You've got it in one. Margaret, what a star. Baptism. Jesus' baptism. This is actually really fundamental, I think, to understanding the temptation of Jesus. So Jesus goes to be baptized in the River Jordan by John the Baptist. And as he's baptized, the heavens open and he hears a voice from heaven, God speaking to him, God the Father. And he says this, "This is my beloved Son, whom I love. With him I am well pleased." This is my beloved Son, whom I love. With him I am well pleased. Wow. I think that is so fundamental to understanding what happened next, because it says Jesus was then led by the Spirit into the wilderness. I don't think Jesus would have been able to face the temptations he did unless he'd had that affirmation of his identity. And there's a couple of things I want to say about that, actually. Do you realize that that affirmation is before Jesus has done a thing? It's before he's even faced the temptations, actually. I think God would have said that to him even if he'd failed in those temptations. I do. I think that this is an affirmation fundamentally about who Jesus is, that he is loved, he is treasured, and God delights in him no matter what. Before he's preached a sermon, before he's healed a sick person, before he's faced a temptation, God says, "I love you. You're my Son. In you, I am well pleased." And I think for us, today, with all the temptations we have, you know, a friend of mine said, the only form of censorship today is self-censorship. And it really is true, actually. Temptation's everywhere. It's in your face. You don't have to look for it. It comes to you. It really does. And in order to face temptation in our lives, I think we've fundamentally got to know who we are and whose we are, that we are loved and delighted in. I believe that that affirmation is for us today. You know, John, one of Jesus' disciples, later wrote, "How great the love the Father has lavished on us that we should be called children of God." And I think unless we know that as our foundation, we'll be blown this way and that way, because we'll be on unsteady ground. If you don't know fundamentally that you are loved and delighted in by God, no matter what you do, how can you face temptation and overcome? That's the solid ground on which our lives should be built. So then Jesus is led into the wilderness by the Spirit. At the moment, I'm reading a little book, and it's a great book, and it's on initiation rites, male initiation rites. And it's a fantastic book, and it talks about different cultures in the world that initiate boys into men. And we've lost that in Western culture. And a lot of what happens is boys stay boys and don't become men. And when you read this passage, this is a classic initiation rite. Jesus taken, led into a wilderness place to face desire and temptation. And I think one of the big questions asked by this passage, and it's based on what we've read before, is will Jesus trust his identity? Will he trust the identity of a beloved son in God? And you notice that when you read the passage, and it says, how does the devil tempt Jesus? He starts at least two of the temptations. If you're the Son of God, if you are the Son of God, goes for the identity issue because he knows that is where the battle is won or lost. Will Jesus trust himself to God? For me, it helped me read this passage in a whole new light. It wasn't just about, oh, Jesus was hungry, therefore he's being tempted with bread. It's an issue of identity. Will he trust himself to God or to material comfort? Because later on in his ministry, when the going gets tough, things are going to get really, really difficult. They are. He's going to be homeless. He's going to be beaten. He's going to face horrendous physical challenges. Will he trust himself to God, actually, or to his own material comfort? And the second one, throw yourself down from this mountain. God will catch you. If you're the Son of God, of course he will. Because you're the Son of God, do it. Question. That's a question of his identity. Will he trust God? Am I God's beloved Son? Or will he test God? Does he need to test God? It's a matter of identity. Does he know who he is and trust in that? And then thirdly, bow down and worship me, and all this will be yours. Will he seek power for himself? Status, power, stuff? Or will he humble himself before God? These are big questions of identity. And, you know, Amy and I were talking in the car yesterday, and we were talking about the wilderness experience, and we were talking about how it's great to have church family because it kind of gets us out of the wilderness, really, because the wilderness is a lonely place, so we have church family and people around us to help us with that. But actually, the wilderness is a really important place for all of us. The wilderness experiences, when we are lonely, hungry, hurting, tired, all these experiences we go through as human beings are kind of the practice ground for the temptations of life, for the other areas where we're doing well, where we're working, where we're contributing, and all of a sudden there's these temptations. If we've not dealt with them in the wilderness, knowing who we are and whose we are, how can we deal with them when things are good and when the temptations come? So Jesus overcame in the wilderness. He was able to overcome later on. And I think for us this morning, to think about the secret place of our hearts, where the temptations really happen and where they're overcome. And if that sounds a bit overwhelming, which I know it can, I just want to encourage everyone this morning to start with, you, in the face of your own temptations, whatever's going on in your life, to start in the place of identity. That's the place to start, knowing that you are loved, delighted in, God's beloved child. I would say to anyone, don't start by trying to grit your teeth and overcome things. Start by getting before God and saying, show me who I am. You may have heard it said, the way to say no in life is to have a bigger yes. Has anyone heard that? That stuck with me. When I did my gap year, we did this whole session on, I did a YWAM discipleship training year, and we had a session on addiction. And one of the things that the speaker said was that the way to say no in life to something is to have a bigger yes to something else. And that's true, isn't it? If you're an athlete, a top athlete, and, you know, that doesn't mean you don't like eating chocolate cake. Maybe it means you don't sometimes eat chocolate cake. But actually, your bigger yes is this vision of what you want to achieve and who you are. And I think that applies to so many things. And that's the case for us. Our bigger yes is who we are in God when we're tempted and tried by the things of life. And that foundation is our bigger yes. And it's true. You don't need fake intimacy when you know the love of God, when you know who you are in God and are confident in that. I'm not saying this is easy at all. You know, I'm not saying I have this sorted, but I believe it's true. You don't need anger in your life when you know that you're loved and delighted in by God. How could you? That drives out anger. And actually, you don't need more and more stuff when you know you're loved by God. That is the foundation of everything, you know. I don't need stuff to satisfy me or anything. So my prayer for us today is that we would know that bigger yes in our lives, that we would know that bigger yes of our identity known and loved and delighted in by God. And I'd like to pray as we close this part of the service. And my prayer for us today is that for anyone that feels like, I've given in so much to temptation, or I feel trapped by temptation, that, you know what, so often we try and get out of that by being good, and it actually ends up just being a vanity project, trying to appease our guilt. Actually, no, I don't do that anymore. I don't do that anymore. I'm good. You're not good. No one's good but God. And my prayer is that actually we would just know our identity in God, and that being our way to freedom. So let's pray. And let's maybe start just by bringing to mind and being real with God about our areas of struggle, whether that's areas of lust that we've spoken about this morning, or that just desire to have, to be satisfied in life by material things, or that temptation to elevate ourselves above others by speaking badly about them, or whatever it might be. And let's confess those things to God. And now I'm just going to share those words, and just in the quietness of your heart, this is a step of faith. This is the gospel. To receive this affirmation is the good news. So as I share these words, I want to invite you to receive them in faith for yourself. And I'm going to say them a couple of times. You are my beloved child, whom I love. In you I am well pleased. You are my beloved child, whom I love. In you I am well pleased. Amen. The final thing I just wanted to say really is that, as I said at the beginning, we're talking about life's big issues, and our reference point for those things as Christians is Jesus. But the context in which those things are worked out is the church. That's what the church is, isn't it? It's a place where we work those things out together. We sharpen one another. We encourage one another. And if this has raised anything for you this morning, I really want to encourage you to be real with each other about that, and pray for one another, and share with people your struggles or what it is you might be going through. I want to make myself available after the service if you'd like to pray, particularly if that thing of the affirmation of God in your life. I'd love to pray for anyone that feels actually, yeah, I need that, but I'm not sure about it. So I'd love to pray for you. Miranda, are we going to go into worship now?